we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Who is in charge of your body, you or the government? I'm Dr. Marilyn Singleton, and welcome to America Out Loud Pulse, always a beat ahead. For years, the health insurance industry has been dictating the quality and quantity of medical treatments we get. High insurance premiums, co-pays, out-of-pocket deductibles are squeezing patients out of the market. Even so, physicians and patients begrudgingly acquiesce. Now, not only is private equity taking over the healthcare industry, but the administrative state is making it hard for physicians to serve their patients fully and satisfactorily for both parties. The Oath of Hippocrates has upheld the sanctity of the patient-physician relationship for thousands of years. Now we have mandates. They intrude into that relationship. Mandates rely on coercion rather than informed consent and a full discussion between the patient and the doctor. Various laws, particularly in California, are squelching that choice for patients. They're squelching free speech for physicians, even with threats of losing their licenses. The result? Patients are losing their choice in medical treatment. For example, many colleges have mandated COVID vaccines, even in the face of mounting evidence of an association with heart inflammation, especially in that college age group. California now has an immunization registry that invades our privacy. The silver lining to all this: medical tyranny has gone so far that more and more patients and physicians are becoming activists. Today's guest is one of those physicians who's taken to the streets, so to speak, to reclaim medicine for patients and physicians. Dr. Shibra Jamil is a board-certified anesthesiologist. She earned her medical degree from State University of New York, Downstate Medical Center, College of Medicine, and completed her residency at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. She's the founder of Office Anesthesia Solutions. She's also certified in age management medicine that coaches people on how to improve their health using lifestyle modification techniques. We've talked about that whole thing on this show before, and you can never get enough of that. She's currently leading a group called Patients and Physicians Reclaiming Medicine. And this is an organization that's committed to preserving the patient-physician autonomy and defending medical professionals who are unfairly disciplined by their state medical boards. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jamil.
Thank you so much for having me today, Marilyn. I really appreciate this opportunity to speak about the work that Patients and Physicians Reclaiming Medicine is doing. And it's interesting that, you know, you said I'm just a physician that took to the streets, and that's a really accurate description, because prior to COVID, I was just a doctor doing my job, you know, going to the hospital, taking care of my patients, and it was all good. Here we are 3 years later.
Well, you know, it's interesting because so many times on this show, I'll complain about something and then I'll say, but the good thing that came out of COVID, so many, a list of things, parents got to see what their kids were learning in school when they saw what was popping up on the computer and they were stunned. And so look at the movement that started in the state of Virginia. And there's many more things that were discovered that COVID brought out. It seemed like it brought out the worst in a whole lot of arenas, and medicine, unfortunately, was one of them. I'm just going to ask you, just to get started, what got you interested in medicine in the first place?
So I've been on the medical pathway since basically high school. I think I credit my parents a lot for that. My background in my culture and community, you know, medicine has always been considered a field in the highest regard. You cannot do anything better than becoming a physician. So that definitely played a role. I went to a high school where they had a pre-med track. I got involved in that. And then it was straight through to medical school residency. And here I am 20 years later.
Wow. Well, good for you. So, and you managed to do that, and you're a mom too, huh?
Wow. Yeah, I actually have four kids. So it's wonderful, you know, and I think we're in the same specialty. I'm an anesthesiologist. And it's an amazing field. Even with all the issues that we're having, it's great. It's like really wonderful.
Yeah, it is. Well, let's get into where some of this stuff started. I know you're not in California, but, you know, as they say, as California goes, so goes the nation, whether it's good or bad. And lately, it seems to all be bad. A few years back, now it's 7 or 8 years back, in California, there is a bill called SB 277. And that changed the vaccination requirements for kids. And it made kids, whether they were private school even, had to have a certain set of vaccinations. And I think that's what got a lot of people going. Was that something that you had heard about even back east?
So actually not really. You know, I've been always part of the mainstream medical practice. So I have four kids. There was a schedule of vaccinations. My parents got us vaccinated, but back then it was, you know, just a few vaccines and you were good to go. And it's never been too much of an issue here because you were able to get exemptions. But now, on reflection, just that whole vaccine mandate in order to attend school, that has to be revisited. It's really a bullying technique. And I think COVID has brought that to the forefront more than anything else. But like you say, in California, they've been dealing with this pre-COVID. And it's really interesting, the laws and the legislation that are getting passed that don't serve the interest of parents or children. So you have to see what's actually going on.
Well, that sure is the truth. And this whole thing of the mandates and why it was so stunning when they passed this law in California, that you couldn't even have a personal belief exemption. And that's what really got people going, because people said, okay, fine. They said to get all this stuff, well, we could always assert our personal belief. So that went out the window. And so that's what had started getting a few groups going here. And those were mostly parents. But then with the COVID, it started to creep in to where it absolutely affected doctors and the medical boards in really across the country started to attack doctors for their behavior around vaccines and COVID vaccines, certainly. So what have you seen in that regard? And what are some of the stories that come out of that?
So it's been incredible. You know, here in New York, when this first started, I was working in the hospital. And obviously in the beginning, everybody was a bit confused. There was some fear, you know, it was March 2020 and everything was shutting down. But very quickly, it became apparent that what we were being told wasn't in alignment with what was happening. And I think that was where I started asking questions. Now, as physicians, we're trained to ask questions. That is one of our primary responsibility. And we also have an obligation to find the right answers, to look at all the information. And so it was little things. There would be articles in the newspaper that said people are spreading COVID because they refuse to comply with the masking mandates. And I was in New York City, and I would look around and 90% of the people would be masked up. Some were double masked. I said, oh, this story doesn't make much sense. Like, what's going on here? Then there were like inconsistent policies where healthcare workers didn't need to be tested. I was in the hospital. I didn't have to get tested to go to work. If anybody was going to be infectious or contagious or dangerous, that would be me or any medical professional. But they needed us to show up, so we didn't have to get tested. However, my kids, who were very low risk, had to get daily testing in order to attend school. So these type of things started having me ask questions about what's going on. And then, you know, you start digging and you find a lot of interesting things.
Yeah. Well, what has happened to some of the doctors who've tried to defy some of these rules at their patients' requests, not just to be obnoxious, but when patients have requested, no, I don't want this, and the doctor has written an exemption, and some of these doctors have been punished.
Right. That is also another incredible story, because traditionally, a physician has supreme authority in treating their patient. So if a patient comes to you, between you and your patient, you have a conversation and you determine in conversation and in discussion with your patient, what's best for that patient. And then you make that decision, and nobody really has a right to interfere with that. If you determine that this intervention might be harmful and the harms are greater than the benefits in a medical therapeutic, then you as a physician get to make that determination, and it has to be respected. What was happening with COVID was patients were saying, being told that their doctor's opinion did not count if it wasn't in alignment with a narrative that was being portrayed by the authorities. And doctors were being punished if they didn't follow the narrative, and there's no legal basis for this. So that is how I got involved in some of the work that I'm currently doing. My brother is also an attorney in New York. So a lot of times in the very beginning, I was like, this is crazy. This should be illegal. Why are they allowed to do this? And so we sort of had, started working on this medical legal alliance, and then I got connected with PPRM, which is Patients and Physicians Reclaiming Medicine, a group out of California, which was already doing some of this work of bringing physicians and attorneys together in order to preserve the patient-physician autonomy and relationship. Because in California, as you mentioned, they have been dealing with this pre-COVID with the SB 277 and the 276 and childhood vaccine schedule. So some of their doctors had been subjected to some of this tyranny pre-COVID, and they were already in the middle of it. So they had some experience where a lot of us were totally taken,
Well, it's funny because, and this is something patients don't hear about, and it's kind of a hard thing to discuss. It's like you think, well, medical boards serve a really good purpose. They license people. They make sure that charlatans don't become doctors and all that sort of thing. Sometimes a few people sneak through. And they make sure you get continuing education. So they're supposed to be something that helps keep the public safe. They're not supposed to practice medicine. But it seems of late, the medical boards, the FDA, these government entities have decided they want to be your doctor.
So it's very interesting, because I've had a very quick education about the medical boards and all the different medical agencies that are involved in regulating medical practice. And I think most physicians would be very wise if they started looking into the legal aspects of how medical practice is regulated in your individual states and in this country. So we all know there's medical boards. They are responsible for licensing physicians, and actually they're really the only entity that has authority to discipline physicians. So for instance, all the different associations like the American Medical Association or your, Anesthesia Association, they can make recommendations, but it doesn't have any legal weight behind it. Also with the FDA and the CDC, it was very interesting because they put forth a lot of regulations and recommendations, but at some point when they were called out on it, they said they didn't actually mandate anything. They were just making suggestions that physicians could follow. Now, they went on the back end and did a lot of used a lot of different methods to make sure their suggestions and recommendations would be implemented, and very harshly. But in reality, they don't get to dictate how a physician practices medicine. They don't have the legal authority to do that. It's the Medical Practice Act, which regulates the practice of medicine in each state. And it's really important that doctors be familiar with what's in that Medical Practice Act. And yes, you're exactly right. The medical board is tasked to protect the public from egregious behavior from some rogue doctors. What would those things be? Well, you know, if your doctor has a drug problem, he probably shouldn't be practicing because it'll affect his judgment. You know, something like that should be investigated by the medical board. And even then, the Medical Practice Act will guide them on how that physician can be disciplined. So these medical boards were completely going beyond their what they were tasked to do. It's an overreach of power. And unfortunately, physicians are not familiar or knowledgeable. And we are also risk averse. So a lot of us were afraid of losing our careers. And, you know, maybe the first approach that we had wasn't the best one. So
that's right. We have the doctors in the go along to get along mode because so much is at stake. When we come back, we'll talk after the break. We'll talk some more about this and some of the other things that are out there that people need to know about. And again, some are in California, but any of these rules, once they pass muster in one state, you can bet your bottom dollar another state's going to pick it up. So one thing I'm going to talk about, allergy season has started. So I have to say I caught a little bit of itchy eyes. I learned something about allergies, that the season starts even before you see the buds on the trees, that the pollen pops out before. Little hint if you start to get itchy eyes. And I mention that because I use Cofix RX every day. And this is a nasal spray that has iodine and vitamin D and xylitol. These things are antibacterial and antiviral. And at first I thought, oh no, my Cofix isn't working. And then it's like, oh, allergy eyes. But we have to remember that almost all of us get sick by inhaling the viruses through our noses. So if we can stop it when it's incubating over those first 2 to 5 days, we can reduce or eliminate the impact of that viral invasion. And that's why I use Cofix RX. I'm trying to stay healthy through the winter and certainly all year long. And one of the wonderful things I like about this product is it was invented by American doctors and manufactured in America. So I love these made in the USA products. You can get it at health food stores, medical offices, and pharmacies. And you can get it online. We have a little button for it on our page. And you can just pop on the button and read more about Cofix RX. But I do recommend it highly.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Well, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
Well, we were talking about the medical boards, and they're really their iron fist over doctors. And like so many things that have happened with administrative organizations, administrative departments, is they start off with a good mission. It's a fabulous mission to want to keep the public safe. No question about it. But then there's that mission creep or what power trip that suddenly these folks go on. And one of the big things that happens in some of these hearings is there's no due process for doctors. Does your brother, did he get into that whole aspect of some of these medical board problems?
So my brother's a general attorney in New York, and we actually very early on realized that the whole medical censorship and misinformation, disinformation issue was going to be critical moving forward, and that doctors would need to be protected from this narrative that was being pushed. And it was being pushed by our own associations. Actually, the AMA put out a letter advocating that doctors who were behind misinformation and disinformation needed to be disciplined. So one of our earlier initiatives working with a group of physicians was to write an open letter to the AMA. We said there that, and actually in the practice of medicine, there is no such thing as misinformation and disinformation. Those are just nebulous terms. Really, you have opinions. And if a doctor gives a knowingly false opinion on a subject matter, then that's a crime. And so we wanted to address this push towards medical censorship. And then that's how we sort of got in, started finding who's actually responsible. The AMA doesn't really have that much authority, but because they have a lot of members and money, they have lobbying power. And we got connected with the idea that medical boards are the ones that really are managing the discipline. And then the doctors out in California who have been dealing with this, their stories are really what is motivating a lot of the work of PPRM and also my involvement, because they are just their patients love them. They are doing the right thing, trying to do what's best for the patient after having, a lengthy relationship with a lot of these families. And in some roundabout fashion, somebody submits a complaint against them, and then they lose their licenses and they have to settle because it's very complicated to fight with the medical board. It's very expensive. So their attorneys are advising them to settle. And that settlement a lot of times ties their hands from practicing the best medical care, giving their patients the best medical care, practicing ethical medicine. If you're not allowed to advise your patient on what's best for their health, then you're not really doing your job. And so it's a real struggle.
Well, I tell you, the idea that doctors, what happened in the California law, doctors were singled out because the law gave a fixed number. It was very low, like 5. If you wrote more than that for vaccine exemptions, then you became a target of the roving band of snoops. And the thing that I found fascinating just in reading it, It's typical of poorly written laws. There, it didn't say per patient, per family. What if the family had seven kids? So, and each kid had eczema or some sort of autoimmune problem that makes them not wise choices to get the vaccines. So you're going to write five just for that family. What do you do for the rest of the families? I mean, there were things like that that to me, even if you're going to have a rule like that, at least make it a fair rule. It seemed to make no sense. And that's what made me think it was purely punitive.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Again, what is the legal basis of limiting a number of vaccine exemption a physician can write? That goes against the basis of sound medical practice. Each patient is a unique individual. When they come to your office, you don't treat them based on who you last saw in your office. So again, there's some laws that are being violated there, but because we physicians are not familiar, we get afraid and we give in to these rules instead of challenging them. And, you're from California, so you're probably more familiar with this, but even the SB 277, it's a really interesting story because they passed that law to sort of appease the fact that patients could no longer get personal exemptions. And if you look at the language in that law, it actually allows a physician to use their best judgment to determine what their patient needs. Now, a couple of years later, they came in and passed 276. This 276 was a much harsher law, which would allow the doctors who were writing the exemptions to get punished. A lot of the physicians in our group didn't write any exemptions after 276 was passed, but they still were subjected to that law. Most of their exemptions had been written under 277, which actually allowed them to write exemptions. So it's so egregious. It's so unlawful in some ways, but currently a lot of things that are legal are unlawful. And the only way to fight back is to educate ourselves and then have the courage to stand up and say, we're going to do the right thing. And that's some of what we work on as well. You know, we are going to have to push back and how to push back.
Well, I think you're very smart, as with any group that maintains any degree of staying power or success in its advocacy, you've got to have patients involved. I mean, so many times what doctors do is kind of in the weeds for people, and whatever their administrative issues are, nobody really cares. But when it affects patients, that's when you get the guy on the street caring. It's like, whoa, you mean I can't get this from my doctor? You mean the doctor I've been going to for these many years, I can't talk to anymore? I can't talk to freely? And that's what really bothers me. You don't want patients to clam up, nor do you want the doctor to clam up. And it strikes fear in the hearts of both sides of the equation.
Absolutely. I think the most crucial person in this relationship is the patient. The work that I do and I'm involved in, and when I first started getting more active, was because I was able to look at the information that I had and said, patients are going to get harmed. And so fundamentally, when physicians are silenced, it's our patients that are harmed, right? We can listen to the law and just say, well, we're doing our job. The government told us to do this. The patients that we're taking care of will suffer. So PPRM specifically is an organization that is calling all, and we're all potential patients. If you're not a patient right now, sometime in the future, you will need medical advice and you will need medical care. So we want this partnership because you have to stand up for your rights. You don't want to go to a physician's office and for the physician either to have to lie to you because that's what the government wants, or say, well, I can't tell you what's best for you. But this is what I can tell you, and it might not be best for you. That's a really strange way to practice medicine.
I'll say, one of the other things that's so bothersome about these professional snoops is that when a doctor is under investigation, and patients need to know this, they can go in and get other charts, not just the chart of the patient who there was the alleged problem with. And this is scary to me. And again, you don't want patients afraid to go to the doctor. You don't want them afraid to say what's on their mind, particularly if it's mental health issues or drug addiction issues, things that they wouldn't want other people to see. That's the whole point of that sacred patient-doctor relationship. What did Hippocrates call them? Holy secrets. Well, those holy secrets, certainly, I don't know who said it. It's like the only secret now is if two of the people who have the secret are dead, or, you know, whatever that right, little expression exactly. was. And it's like suddenly you've got these third parties in there. And patients don't like it. And it always had bothered me. And you know, you're in anesthesia sometimes, especially these days with outpatient. And so you don't do long pre-op visits like we did in the old days when you were in the patient's room, that you want all the information, kind of just the facts, ma'am, nothing but the facts, but you want the truth. I need to know, did you snort some cocaine this morning before we're coming in to do your nose surgery? Well, if a patient thinks that all this stuff is subject to public viewing, they're not going to tell you the truth. Then you're going to get medical complications.
Exactly. And, you know, changing the topic just for a moment, this is also something that's been really fascinating to watch, how the mainstream doctors, and I'll just use that term because for lack of a better way to categorize our colleagues, how they've forgotten to do a differential. So we introduced something very novel in 2021, which was the COVID vaccine into our medical tools. And we said that this might help people with prevent them from getting COVID, prevent their neighbors from getting COVID, prevent them from dying, prevent them from hospitalizations. And then 6 months down the line, a lot of physicians started witnessing strange signs and symptoms among their patients. And that's, I think, pretty much established fact at this point. However, they refused to do a differential. They were not putting vaccines as something that was introduced into the patient's history. And so patients come in and how are we to evaluate them without looking at everything that's going on in their life? That's just basic medicine 101, right? A good history, a good physical, and then you make your differential. Now, it's possible that the vaccine is not what's responsible for the injuries, but you do have to consider it in your differential and then very methodically rule it out and prove why it's a possibility or not a possibility. But many of our colleagues don't even want to, like, it doesn't get on the list. And so if you can't get to the root cause of a problem, down the line, you're going to have terrible consequences. And so we really need to start reassessing our practice and what's going on. And for our patients' sake, again, always for the patient's sake, because we can walk away and go pursue another career.
Well, I tell you that this is where I think this activism coming on the shows and trying to educate people is starting to pay off, because I think more and more people, I hate to say, when you have public injuries and whatnot, are beginning to think, why are young, healthy people having problems? Now, the powers that be say, well, they probably got COVID and have some after effects. Then there's a whole nother group that say, well, maybe it was the antigen that was introduced into the body with the vaccine. The problem, and you bring that up when you talk about the differential diagnosis, is that you have to consider it. Nobody's saying that that's what it is, but you have to consider it. And I you know, I'd love for something like this to happen where there's somebody who was always tested for COVID. They didn't have it. And then got the vaccine and then got these issues. Then they can't say, well, they got the COVID. So that's why they had these problems afterwards. And I hate seeing this kind of bias when you're diagnosing patients. You're supposed to look at all the facts, lay them out, and come up with the most likely answer. But suddenly, it's just like the media and all this other stuff, is a certain bias is pushed on the doctor.
Yeah, it's definitely a red flag when doctors are not willing to have conversation, even though that is the foundation of our practice. In the old days, you would have grand rounds, you would have M&Ms, and people would debate and argue and prove why their idea was the most likely reason something was going on. In 3 years, all that is gone. And it's just fascinating to watch, very disturbing and very concerning because, again, one of the goals and the work you're doing and my work is to prevent harm, to minimize the harm. And unfortunately, I think what's going to happen is more harm is going to have to manifest before things correct themselves. And that's not a good way for this to unfold.
No, we don't want that to happen. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about some positives after the break. First, I want to thank everyone for listening to America Out Loud Pulse, a beat ahead. You can hear Pulse every weekday at 5 with an encore at 10 p.m., that's Eastern Time, and on iHeartRadio at 8 a.m. the next morning. You can listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. What I like is all the shows go direct to podcast in 24 hours, and the episodes are on lots of networks, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, Stitcher, and iHeart, to name a few. So make it easy. Bookmark AmericaOutLoud.com/pulse. One of the things, and I think was, I guess I'll call Malcolm Brilliant, who came up with the idea that a different person every day for the show. I'm on Mondays. We have Tuesdays with concerned doctors, Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley. Wednesdays with Dr. Peter McCulloch and Malcolm Out Loud. Thursdays with Dr. Peter Bregan and Ginger Ross Bregan. And Fridays with Dr. Harvey Riesch. And so it's a lineup that's fun. Everybody's different. So it's worth it to listen every day. And remember about Nurses Out Loud. That's on Monday through Friday also. And that's on at 10 a.m. Eastern. So got a lot of medical stuff for you to listen to. And very informative. And we try to have a little fun too, despite some of our topics that, give us chills sometime.
AmericaOutLoud.com. If you can't find it here, you can't find it anywhere. We are the pulse and voice of everyday American thought, working hard to earn your trust for 7 incredible years and counting. America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's fast-paced digital age makes it tougher. You're not alone. Poor sleep affects over 70% of us. The CDC even labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created REM Sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake refreshed. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM Sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all 4 stages of sleep using calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.4 proves it works. Take back your sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order, risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD.
So we were talking about this idea of privacy and doctors being able to say what they really think and not having Big Brother in the exam room. And sometimes it's hard to avoid, but some good things that happened. I remember this was out in California. Governor Newsom, all on the news, you know, big deal. We're going to mandate COVID vaccines in order for kids to go through K through 12. Yeah, we're going to be the first state in the nation. He was going on and on. And then magically, last April, it just dropped. And I don't know whether it's the advocacy, whether they decided to finally follow the science and see that children were not the greatest target for these vaccines, or that young men were getting this heart inflammation. Who knows the reason? I hope it's the advocacy, because parents started standing up for themselves. What are some of the other things that your group can do other than give some legal help to some doctors who are facing issues? Can patients come to you for help?
So our mission is definitely focused on patients as well as physicians. So we do have a legal defense fund, which is specifically set up for the doctors who are being disciplined by their boards. And this is a national group. So if any physician is being disciplined, they should reach out to us and we can see how we can help them and work together. But we are also focused on patients. And one of our main missions is to educate the patients to be able to know what their medical rights are and how to be able to advocate them for them in a meaningful fashion. We want the education that we provide to result in impactful action. Many organizations are doing amazing work, which is why I think you saw what you saw in April with Newsom backing down. This is, you know, the work that you do, AAPS, CHD, and there's so many. And people are beginning to understand what's at stake. And now we need to go to the next step of how we are going to use that information in a meaningful way and create solutions that work for us. And that's what PPRM is really focused on, in addition to defending physicians so they're able to do their job and serve their patients.
Well, it's one of these things. It's sad to think that we have to resort to legal means to get some of these things stopped. But sometimes legal means are the only thing that works. But I do think some of these politicians backing off, even though they know they're going to be reelected, that there isn't anybody really running against them 93% of the time, the incumbents get reelected, which is crazy to me because they don't do squat for you, but foolish people just sit there and reelect the same old creeps, that they back off. There was one, I don't know if you know about this one, yet another one in California that was introduced that was going to require the human papillomavirus, the HPV vaccine, for 8 through 12 kids. What is that? I mean, there's so many people that are against it in the first place, not to mention now there's a lot of problems that have come up with that. And so she's trying to move that bill forward. Apparently that's stalling. And it leaves me to wonder why. Have you been involved in stalling that bill?
So that is on our radar, and it is something that we're going to be looking at and seeing how we can educate the California constituency that will be affected by this and then get ahead of the game so they can start reaching out and making some noise about why they're not interested. And again, you know, we're at a place where we need to get involved in the civic process and know what that means and how to make the government work for us, which is actually the purpose of government. And I think we became a little complacent because life was comfortable. And that is one of the silver linings of COVID, in my opinion, that discomfort that we're now experiencing is going to force us to get engaged and start asking some really hard questions and then advocating for ourselves. No more handouts. You know?
Well, that's very interesting. And I do think advocacy is finally starting to work. And there's another legal case that came out. People across the country, doctors and even patients, heard about this AB 2098 that was in California that went to lawsuit right away. And this was a law where the law said that doctors that put forth misinformation about COVID-19 could lose their license. And then they tried to define what misinformation was. And the judge even said, this is so vague, and it wasn't even coherent how they tried to describe it, that information that was contradicted by contemporary scientific consensus. Well, the thing that cracked me up about that, every time I read that word, I think about all the articles that are coming out now. Now almost 3 years ago, I wrote an article called Mass Facts. I curated a bunch of studies on masks and filtering influenza virus, same size as COVID, and studied the distancing and all this sort of thing, and said that it didn't work. Okay, oh, what a horrible person. You know, right winger, blah, right. blah, blah. Right. And guess what? Big Cochrane study comes out in February that says masks don't work. Hello. So was I having misinformation? No, I just reviewed a bunch of studies, just like they reviewed a bunch of studies. I just wrote about it sooner. And they had studies that actually then included COVID, which you could extrapolate from influenza. And, so that would have been misinformation. And then what else came out in February? Oh, the natural immunity. Whoa. Right. There was a guy that was fired because he said, I've had COVID. I've had natural immunity. And now, even there, what was it? I think an Israeli study several months back had said natural immunity was strong, just as strong, if not stronger, than anything by the vaccine. So what is this contemporary scientific consensus? You know, what does that even mean?
This is a really good question. And actually, I wrote an article on this. I'll share it with you if you're interested about, you know, it's kind of anti-science to say consensus-based science. Science is something that is actually, by definition, somebody sees something that other people don't see and investigates that. They form a hypothesis. This is something we learn in high school. Most science students in 11th grade will know, you know, come up with an idea and then prove if it's wrong or right. And we know throughout history that there have been scientists, the mad scientists working in their lab, and everybody thinks they're crazy. But science is a solitary pursuit, and it's based on individuals being able to see or observe things that maybe other people don't have access to. And all of a sudden, you know, we are exposed to this idea of consensus-based science. I'm not sure what that even means, right? Like, as a physician, you have supreme authority. It's actually what you were granted when you got your medical degree, to look at the literature, look at all the different studies, and based on your expertise, come to a conclusion on what's best for your patient. Absolutely, there can be consensus on things, but to say that consensus-based science should drive medical decisions, I feel that's anti-science.
Well, it's interesting, both of us as anesthesiologists, I think daily in work, you're hit with that whole idea that every patient is different. I remember anesthetizing a girl who was as big as a minute. She 90 pounds. She wasn't a drug user, sucked up the anesthesia. You do some big guy, used to do the Oakland Raiders, give a little squirt and they're out like a light. You can't tell. And yes, we have guidelines that so many milligrams per kilogram of X drug or Y drug, but you're sitting there with that patient titrating your drugs. And to me, that's the ultimate example of how individual patients are.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, diversity actually means to be able to treat people in a diverse fashion, right? And somehow, like right now, there's a movement that in under the umbrella of diversifying, we're trying to treat everybody as if they're the exact same. And again, medicine specifically cannot be practiced in that fashion. There's only going to be harm.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that, and I think in their hearts, patients know that. And now they're getting into this genomic medicine where you can tell when you do these scans, which pain medicine is going to work better on which person. And we've kind of always known Demerol works on some people, morphine works better on others and all that. So there's a lot of trying certain things. And so now these genomic scans, which everybody doesn't have the capability or the computer space to do it, can tell you, oh, this diuretic's going to work better than the other one. But for the most part, you've got to look at your patient and decide right there by all the characteristics of that patient, which one of these drugs is going to work the best. Try that one. And generally, you're right. Generally, because of your experience and what you talked about earlier, that differential diagnosis, taking the patient's whole life, that includes their family, are they happy, where they live, all these things into consideration, you give a drug and generally pick the right one. But so this idea of telling doctors that they can't talk about everything or give the full informed consent, it's actually pretty disgusting. And definitely, as you said, will cause harm to patients. And
I think it's also unethical, and it goes against the foundations of medical practice. You know, I sort of view it as COVID era medicine, which is a whole new experience to me. Nothing like what I was trained to do in medical school. And I don't think it's a good model. Actually, it's a terrible model. And we really just need to get back to the basics, get back to the foundations of medical practice. And if you revisit those foundations and that ethical practice that many of us are fighting for, many of us who never thought we would be here, but understand that this is what, you know, we became physicians to do. And now we have to stand up for that. We are able to come to this conclusion because we are going back to the foundation and we are going back to the basics. And that's not going to fail you, you know, when you go back to the basics and say, okay, how can I do my H&P and how do I make this differential and how do I rule these things out? And look at the patient as a whole, not as a collective, you'll come up with the right answers and then you'll be able to serve your patients.
Well, that sure is the truth. And, you know, now that AI and which is useful in medicine, you know, somebody feeds some stuff in the computer and out pops an answer. And a lot of the students are like, oh, isn't this exciting? The computer's going to come up with an answer. But there's still a patient in front of you, and the patient is still a person. And that's the thing that we just have to make sure the new students know is, I don't care. You can have all the AI, you can have all the equity and diversity and inclusion and identity and all that kind of stuff. But the patient in front of you is who you have to take care of.
100%. And, you know, I don't think we need to be afraid of technology. You know, there was a time where there were no stethoscopes, and obviously having a stethoscope made our job a lot easier. AI will make the job of a physician maybe easier. But at the end of the day, nothing can replace that patient-physician relationship, even though currently it is being undermined and there is an active effort to destroy it. And this is where PPRM is hoping to make a difference, like get patients to recognize how valuable and important it is for them. And that's the work we'll continue to do.
Well, let people know how they can find your website and read about what you're doing.
So our website is reclaimingmed.net. And if you go to the website, you'll get some information about the work that we do. You can also join up as a member so you can participate in our forums. The best thing would be to subscribe to our newsletter. We have a weekly Saturday meetings, which are very informative, where we discuss some of the issues that we brought up here. And those are open to everyone. You just have to subscribe for our newsletter and you'll get a link to attend the meeting. And then you can start becoming involved in some of these things if they matter to you.
Well, Doctor, thank you so much for coming on the show. I've learned a lot, and I'm sure our listeners have too. And I'm sure we'll talk again. Thanks again for coming.
Great. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity. And, you know, I really admire the work that you do as well. It's really phenomenal. So thank you.
Thank you. So I just want to thank all the listeners for tuning in and tuning in every week. And some of you know that we've got the question and answer feature where you can email in a question. First names are fine, to americaoutloud.com/pulse, and we'll get you an answer. And just keep on listening. Every show is different, and you pick up a kernel of information Monday through Friday, and every kernel adds up to that whole basket of popcorn. And we've got a very wise listenership, and thanks again. And so whether you agree or have other opinions, share the show. And so until next week, say it loud. I'm free and I'm proud.